SEN America. This is the SEN MLB podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to SEN Baseball. Joining me behind the microphone for this week's edition of SEN Baseball, Xavier Player.
Fritto, good as always. How are you, mate?
I'm going beautifully, mate. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to roll straight into MLB standings. We've got plenty to talk about this week. We're going to have a chat with Brendan Wilson later on in the show, just regards to the Southern Mariners that went through undefeated, first in Lismore, then to the Philippines that went undefeated, now move on to Little League World Series next Friday, I believe they travel to the US.
Yeah, no mucking around, quick turnaround, and over to Maine for what could be five wins away from being world champions.
Yeah, phenomenal performance, undefeated to this point, but we'll get Brendan Wilson later on. We're going to get straight into the standings now. Got to talk honkball. Is a big one that is underway at the moment. Australia has performed beautifully over there at Honkaball, but we're just going to go through some Major League standings as they are right now. The American League, the AL East, Boston Red Sox travelling nicely there in first place. They've got 9-1 in their last 10 games, leading the Baltimore Orioles. They jumped in. The Orioles were leading the way for a good part of this season, but with performances like 9-1 in your last 10, Boston's going to do. You'd be pretty happy with that,
look,
I imagine.
I am. Big concern is still pitching, but anytime you're winning 9 games out of 10, life's pretty good.
Absolutely. Thank God for David Ortiz, because the rest of the team's just scuffling. Tampa Bay's trailing there in the American League East. They're 17 games behind. In the American League Central, the Cleveland Indians are leading the way there. They've gone 5-5 in their last 10. Detroit Tigers are in second place. They also went 5-5. Cleveland leading the way in that one, 7 games clear of Detroit. The Minnesota Twins trailing bottom of the AL Central. They're 21.5 games behind. Disappointing year there for Minnesota Twins. In the American League West, Texas Rangers leading the way there. They're 3.5 games clear of the Houston Astros. Texas have gone 2-8 in their last 10. So not the sort of win-loss percentage they're after, but still leading the way in the American League West. Moving now to the National League. Washington Nationals are leading the way in the National League East. They are 4.5 games ahead of Miami. They've gone 6-4 in their last 10, has Washington. Big pitching performance has been coming from Steven Strasburg. We're going to touch on in a couple of moments' time there, Xavier. So in the NL Central, the Chicago Cubs are leading the way over the St. Louis Cardinals. They're 6.5 games ahead of those Cardinals. The Cubbies have gone 5-5 in their last 10. Moving now to the National League West, San Francisco Giants still leading the way there. They are 4 games ahead of the LA Dodgers. San Francisco Giants have gone 4-6 in their last 10, but as I said, they're leading the way, 4 games clear of the LA Dodgers. Let me do some quick math. That works out to be about 95 games, so we've got about 70 to go. Is that right?
Yeah, there's still a long way to go, and there's two things in the standings that jump out at me. One is the Houston Astros, who had a terrible start to the season, but now only find themselves 3.5 games back of Texas, who have slumped.
Yep.
And another team who are clearly leading their division, but almost seem to be in a month-long slump, is the Chicago Cubs.
Cubbies.
It's almost like they've built up enough of a lead. They know that 6.5 games is going to be enough when they play to their potential.
Yep.
So almost foot off the pedal time. I can't recall seeing a last 10 over the last month where they were more than 5-5.
Yeah, they have. They've been, look, you know, if JC was here, he'd be able to set you straight and give you all the
absolutely
press releases and all that sort of stuff, because he's a big Cubbies fan. But look, this the one thing I do know is such a long season. I just mentioned they're roughly 90 games into it, there or thereabouts. So there's still 70 to go. And when it's such a long season of 162 games, it's virtually impossible to stay up all the time and have winning percentage all the time through 162 game season. So right now, with the Cubbies maybe just going slightly off the boil for I'll say around 20 to 30 games, to me is not that big a deal. It's perfect because they know what they're capable of. They're just having a little downtime at the moment and will come home with a wet sail.
And one of the best stories this year could end up being the Miami Marlins. Who would have thought we'd be saying that in April? A team who, many including myself, thought they could lose close to 100 games.
Yep.
And they currently find themselves sitting second in the NL West, 4.5 games behind Washington and a game and a half lead on the Mets. And, geez, it'd be something if Ichiro Suzuki could pick up a ring to finish his career.
Oh, unbelievable. And, of course, nice segue into the Ichiro watch, which I've been following via my Twitter, is he only needs four for 3,000. I think it's pretty well definite that he'll be a lock for the Hall of Fame right now. The 3,000 hits just like puts a double padlock on the whole thing. He has been phenomenal.
Yeah, he has. And as you say, 3,000 hits is the benchmark. A guy gets 3,000, tick that box, he's in.
Yep.
And he has been such a consistent player from the time he came into the league in 2001 to now.
Sure.
That he's not only an exemplary baseball player, but he's an exemplary example of what is great about the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I did touch on, I'm not sure if it was last week, we talked a little bit about the strange facts that tend to go along with Ichiro. It's a bit of an enigma, 42 years of age. If he stays as he is right now, he's on pace to become the highest batting average of the oldest player, Tony Perez. He's was 42 years of age and hit about 328, I believe. Suzuki's currently on pace for around the 340 at 42 years of age. And I have noticed the last few hits he's been getting, he's scratching one out here, got a couple yesterday. A lot of them are still infield singles. So he's still got wheels, you know. He's still busting up the line.
He does. I can't imagine being able to beat out an infield single at 42.
What he does do, he also, when he's in front of his locker or when he travels on the road in front of his locker, he gets a little lint collector and he lints the carpet around his locker. He wipes everything down with disinfectant towels. Unbelievable, this guy's a weird cat. His bats sit in a humidifier. He has one in the home clubhouse and one that he takes on the road, a bat humidifier. The bats are wrapped in bubble wrap prior to travelling. And also he wipes the bats down himself. Everything he has is spotless, which I'm not saying is just an Ichiro Suzuki thing. It's a, and I mean this the nicest possible, it's a very Asian way. They keep their stuff tidy and clean and polish their boots all the time. It's a very much a respect thing to the game, let's say to the baseball gods. But Suzuki is so professional. I do remember having a conversation with Ryan Roland Smith, Australia's very own, currently a broadcaster over in the US of Seattle Mariners games, and he talked about the absolute professionalism that has become Ichiro Suzuki. And let's face it, that's what everybody has grown to love. And the guy is on his way to the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame.
There is nothing more certain than Ichiro being a first ballot Hall of Famer. And speaking of Cooperstown, this weekend, Ken Griffey Jr. and Mike Piazza both go into the Hall of Fame.
This weekend, obviously two of the most popular players to have played the game. Mike Piazza turned out to be a great hitting, not so good catcher. He was an ordinary catcher, but really could crush. He was drafted way down the list. It was some sort of favour to Tommy Lasorda.
I read somewhere that he is the lowest ever draft pick to go into the Hall of Fame.
That's right. They drafted him, I believe it was a favour I think it was Tommy Lasorda, drafted, but turned out to be just this guy that could crush and really hit some monster home runs. I think he leads the Mets for home runs. He was way up there in the catches as home runs as well. Really phenomenal, of course. Ken Griffey Jr., what more do you say about him? His dad was an absolute great player with Seattle, and then they played together, hit back-to-back home runs, father and son. Quite a phenomenal performance. And Ken Griffey Jr., more commonly known as the Kid, had one of the sweetest swings in baseball.
Going back to Piazza for a second, his father asked Lasorda to draft him as a favour.
Yeah.
He was drafted in the 62nd round of the 1988 Major League Baseball Amateur Draft, 1,390th.
Wow, that's way down the pecking order. But even if you did that as a favour, and then the kid turned out to go to the Hall of Fame, that's some sort of, you know, Tommy Lasorda should go out and buy Dad a steak dinner for allowing to be talked into it, because you know, Mike Piazza has turned out to be one of the greats, one of the great hitting catchers, and testament this weekend going into the Hall of Fame.
Now, going back to Griffey for a second, he was widely considered before the voting late last year to be one who could become the first unanimous entry into the Hall of Fame. There were three writers who didn't vote for him.
Yeah.
If you're one of those three writers, how do you justify that decision? Do you use the, oh, he was going to get in anyway? Because for me, it's not about a guy's going to get in. It's about, who do you think is a Hall of Fame player? And if you leave Ken Griffey Jr. off your ballot, that tells me that you do not think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I can't speak for those three that may not have voted for him to go in. That's a tough one. We'd love, you know, we should make that a mission for the second half of the season, is to try and get one of these, just one of them, to give us their reasoning behind it. A lot of the time we don't know. I'll just use Barry Bonds, for example. Barry Bonds was a very polarising character. Some players loved, some journalists loved him, some hated him. You tend to find that the San Francisco Giants journalists loved him. Other teams who he's hit home runs against didn't like him so much. That kind of, I'm not saying unfortunately, fortunately we're all human and we have emotions. So I'd be interested to see where these journalists are from who didn't vote for Ken Griffey to go into the Hall of Fame. You might just find he was the opposition team that he just crushed against and hit, you know, 10 of his 600-odd home runs against, and these journalists are still just dislike Ken Griffey Jr.
Another interesting situation that's come up recently is Rob Manfred was on Mike and Mike on ESPN during the week and was asked about potentially putting a cap on relief pitchers. Here's what he had to say.
It feels like every team has four guys in the bullpen that can throw 95 miles an hour. The game is at times slown by multiple pitching changes within a half inning. So some restriction on the number of relief pitchers that can appear, be it in an inning or in a game. Would you be in favor of something like that?
I am actually in favor of something like that. We spent a ton of time on this issue in the last few months. And, you know, the problem with relief pitchers is that they're so good. I got nothing against relief pitchers, but they do two things to the game. The pitching changes themselves slow the game down. And our relief pitchers have become so dominant at the back end that they actually rob action out of the end of the game, the last few innings of the game.
What I will say there, just prior to commenting on that, I really feel, and let's face it, Rob Manfred is a politician. His job is to be a politician on behalf of MLB baseball. That really sounded to me like he loaded the journalist with the question prior to actually answering it. I think Rob Manfred wanted to put that particular topic on the table because he's right. And you know, the amount of great closers that we are seeing now coming into the game of baseball, when it comes to that tail end in the ninth where you bring in your specialist closer, Aroldis Chapman throws, you know, 105 miles an hour. They really do just shut the game down. So all of the excitement kind of is gone. So I understand where Manfred's coming from with his comments there. Do you think is it necessary to take the relievers out of the game?
I'm really not sure. On one hand, I like it because the slowest part of a baseball game is the last three innings.
Yeah.
Because we see so many pitching changes, because we see things happening on the field, we see managers making moves, and that's great. One of the best things about baseball is the strategy behind it.
Yep.
But on the contrary to that, if they're trying to maintain popularity and there's this big push at the moment of, oh, we've got to secure the next generation of baseball fans, personally, I don't think that's as big an issue as it's being made out to be.
Right.
I don't think that we're in any danger of losing the next generation of baseball fans based on how the game is being played. I think that maybe have it so that if you have a reliever come in, you can have as many relievers as you like, but you've got to have a guy stay in for 2 outs, 15 pitches, whatever it is.
For example.
Rather than saying you can only use 2 relief pitches, say you can use more, but every relief pitcher that comes in has to throw 12 pitches.
To me, it's going to be an interesting one, a bit of a watch this space, because as I say, my initial gut reaction to that is that Rob Manfred, the politician leading MLB, really wanted to put that on the table. So I think that audio that you just played there, I think he might have loaded that journalist up with the question prior to, and he really just wanted to put that particular topic on the table.
Another way to look at this is MLB have been known to look at the experimental rules that they want to implement, the no pitch, intentional walk, the pitching clock, all those sorts of things, and they trial them in international leagues.
Yes.
Now, let's put our domestic hat on for a second.
Oh, we have one, do we?
We do have a domestic hat.
I thought they weren't coming out till November.
Maybe not. So let's look forward into our crystal ball, the ABL this season. If that was to be implemented where you could use a starter and 3 relievers, that's something that can get Australian fans who aren't Australian sports fans who aren't necessarily baseball fans more interested in the game. I think it carries more value in some markets than others. Australians, when they think of their bat and ball sport, they think of cricket.
Yeah.
Here are your 4 people that we have that can bowl. We've got our 5 batsmen, we've got our keeper and our all-rounder.
Yep.
So if you can say, oh great, we've got our batting lineup, but we've also got a starter, a middle reliever, a setup man, a closer. That's our 4-man pitching staff that we use throughout the day.
Yep.
Then I think that's something that could appeal in areas where the game is developing. Do I think it's...
So you're saying nominate these people, your relief pitchers prior to the game.
Yeah, I think...
To somehow garner some interest.
I think situationally and locale-wise, it could work fantastically.
It could.
I think at the highest level of the game,
as you said at the start of your piece there, though, what they're doing is trialling these in various leagues to see how they perform. I think, to borrow your domestic hat for a moment, I think we've got bigger problems than
well, yes.
Right now, we haven't even got managers that are nominating these 4 pitchers are going to throw today. We haven't got players. We haven't got coaches. We haven't got a league.
We haven't got a draw.
We haven't got a schedule right now. So
plenty of problems, as you say.
I understand you said at the start, it's a crystal ball thing. Let's hypothesise on this. And you're right. The MLB are trialling a lot of these things around various leagues around the world. They do stuff in spring training. They've trialled stuff in this is a bit tongue-in-cheek, the old ABL, times 2.
Yep.
They've trialled the 4-pitch walk and the like in that sort of stuff. So it'd be interesting to see where it goes. But again, I'll just come back to Rob Manfred, a politician. I think he wanted that question to be put on the table because it's something that's chewed away at him for a little while in his discussions with other MLB leaders. And they may be going down that path of restricting the amount of relievers you can use in a game.
Will be interesting to see, and will certainly be something we'll be keeping tabs on as it develops. Now, we were talking briefly before about polarising players. Barry Bonds was a polarising player when he played. He's polarising now as a hitting coach with the Marlins.
Oh, they love him now. His head shrunk and they love him.
Now, another polarising player who's in the game at the moment is Hanley Ramirez, and this week he had his first ever 3-home run game. Let's have a listen to some audio.
High fly ball, it's driven deep to right field. Williamson back to the bullpen, leaps into the pen, and it's gone. They both are. And the Red Sox take the lead 2-0. Hanley Ramirez going yard to the opposite field. There's a high fly ball deep into left center field. Back it goes, and that ball is out of here. He's done it again, his second two-run homer in tonight's game. And a drive. Hook deep down the line. That one is up and out of here. And indeed, he did get it back on the very first swing. You've got to be kidding me. Hanley Ramirez for the third time tonight.
Yeah, terrific performance, Hanley Ramirez. We're not on the run sheet there when it had audio of home runs. I actually kind of thought that you might have been going to Albert Pujols, who had an interesting week. He had two multi-home run games. One of them was two home runs, two three-run home runs, six RBIs in one particular game. Pujols was on fire, past another couple of legends on the home run list. But Hanley Ramirez, three in the one game, is some sort of performance. But as I've noticed in MLB, though, you see that quite a bit now, a lot of three-run home run games.
You do, and it's impressive to see, and we talk about things that are keeping fans engaged. It's always good to see someone have a three home run game. It's always good to see someone throw 8.1, 8.2 innings of one or two hit ball.
I'd rather see nine innings.
But it's
then Rob Manfred's things off the table altogether. There's no relief pitching.
You would think so.
Yeah. Also, just one quick one. We're moving on to the Australian side of honkball. We were over in the Netherlands at the moment, performing beautifully. But Steven Strasburg lost for the first time this week. Went 13-0 and lost to the Dodgers this week for his first loss of the season. But moving on to honkball, just before we get into the details of that, before we finish with the Pro Bowl over in the US, a couple of changes or a couple of moves that have happened during the week. Warwick Saupold, who did pitch with the Detroit Tigers, Australia's 32nd MLB player to represent at the major league level, he pulled a groin when he was at the big league level and was on the DL for a little bit. He pitched for the Lakeland Flying Tigers. Another Australian there is Zach Shepherd, the third baseman. But Warwick had a start there, but he's been promoted back to the AAA level with the Toledo Mudhens, and had a start the other day for Toledo. So he's been moved back up to AAA, and hopefully we'll get to see him back at the big league level as soon as possible, because as I mentioned there, Warwick has pitched at the major league level, so can really throw. He, for the Mudhens this week, he threw 4.1, gave up 8 hits, 4 runs, couple of walks and 3 Ks. They ended up winning that game, but he didn't get to the 5-inning mark, so didn't get a result on that one. And another move that did happen also earlier on, was just last weekend, I believe, Alan De San Miguel was Northwest Arkansas, was back up catcher there, but he has, and that's the AA level, he's been promoted to the AAA level with the Omaha Storm Chasers with the Kansas City Royals organization. So terrific for both of those guys. Other moves that have happened earlier in the year, Matt Kennelly was voluntarily retired, I believe, from Mississippi, the Atlanta Braves AA team. And Logan Wade was released earlier on as well. But and this is where the segue comes in, has moved over to the Netherlands to help Australia in their honkerball performance over there. They've done pretty well so far, currently sitting now 4-2. That will make them, in the overnight result, was an extras win
against Caraco. We have progressed to the preliminary final. We'll play Japan for a spot in the final against the Netherlands. But moving back to the start of the week, opened the week up against Chinese Taipei, a 9-5 win against Chinese Taipei. Dusan Rusic picks up the win. Luke Hughes and Darryl George both had multi-hit games. Beat Japan 4-3. Steve Chambers picks up the win. Play Curacao for the first time. Beat them 8-4. With Aaron Suki picking up the win. Darryl George, another multi-hit game. Trent Olchin, a multi-hit game. Played the Netherlands in back-to-back games. Two very disappointing results. Losses to Wilson Lee and Dusan Rusic. We picked up only 4 hits, I believe, or 6 hits across those two games. So really, really frustrating, and certainly something that John Deeble wanting to be work on should we get past Japan to face the Netherlands in the finals.
Yeah, they played after that the second loss there to the Netherlands. They played Curacao overnight. The winning pitcher in that one went down to Josh Lee, and they now progress to the preliminary final to go up against Japan. That one against Curacao overnight was an 8-7 win in 12 innings. They were tied it up in the ninth, I believe, and then had to tie it up again in the 12th, ended up taking the lead. And a phenomenal performance there by the Australian national team at the Honka Ball Week. As I said there, Josh Lee got that win overnight, and then it now progressed to a preliminary final against Japan. Now, the interesting part about all of this tournament is we have done some research. The SEN America team has had a look for the rankings points that they get. Anytime you beat a ranked team, you get X amount of points. And the way it tends to be is if you beat a top 10 ranked team, and I think all of these teams are top 10. Chinese Taipei might be just outside, I'm not sure, but Japan is definitely their number one in the world, and the Netherlands, I believe, sit around 6 or 7, around that spot. So the points that they now accumulate for any international win, they don't necessarily have to win the tournament, but if they win games along the way, the new Premier 12, which is the rebranded World Cup of Baseball, World Championship, the points now go towards the Premier 12 tournament next time round. And the Premier 12, as it explains there, the top 12 ranked teams, after all of these points are accumulated, then go on to this Premier 12 tournament, which is a big purse of $1 million. Korea won it last time round, a 4-3 win over the United States. Terrific performance by Korea, but all of these games now, rankings points go towards the next tournament of the Premier 12.
As of March this year, Japan will rank first, Chinese Taipei third, the Netherlands 10th, and Australia in 13th. So we have managed to beat a few teams who are above us in the rankings, which is really good for our rankings points.
Absolutely.
As we look to push for our maiden Premier 12 berth in 2019, which is such a crucial thing. Yes, we've got the WBC coming up next year, but the Premier 12, because of, we talked about it, I believe, late last year, the prize money involved and the longer term success that comes out of appearing in the Premier 12 is much needed for the game in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned, $1 million went to Korea. The breakup of the money was around $1 million for first place. I believe it was $600,000 for second place. Third was around $400,000 to $450,000, and fourth place, which the Mexicans ended up winning, coming fourth, they wanted their money in cash before they got on the plane to leave the tournament. So they were handed over $300,000 in cash before they would get on the plane to leave the tournament.
Oh, that's something. Yeah. I don't know what to say to that. That's a really strange move to be giving one team prize money in cash.
Yeah.
Just looking at the points awarded for final finishing positions in tournaments, if we go on to finish third, we will receive 30 rankings points, which will take us to 1,512. Second would give 40 points, 1,522 points, and first would give us 50, which would push us to 1,532, which would have us 20 points behind the Dominican Republic, who currently sit in 12th. So even with a win in this tournament at the moment, we can't progress into the top 12, still plenty of time to go, and more importantly for me, a very positive sign that we're going in the right direction.
So you're telling me that individual games don't count for points,
individual
only
games,
the tournament.
Individual games do count for points, but I don't have that in front of me.
Yeah, it's been a tough one to find.
What I do have in front of me is the fact that if we win the tournament, we get 50 points. If we finish second, we get 40. If we finish third, we get 30. And I know based on the standings as they currently are, we will finish in the top three of the tournament, I believe.
Right.
I recall last year when our under-19 team played against Canada, we had 11 games against Canada at the Academy.
Yeah.
I believe each of those games were worth 20 points.
Yes.
So whether it's, but I think,
but
it,
I'm not sure we actually got 20 points.
No,
that,
I don't.
It turned out to be a handshake agreement between a couple of blokes, so I'm not exactly sure if that ended up happening.
From memory, it's 20 points for a win against a team in the top 10.
Yeah.
And 10 points for a win against a team outside of the top 10.
What we will do is over, I'll announce it now just because, but we'll be taking a break for a couple of weeks. But in the second half of the season, we'll endeavour, we'll do some research to get the exact number on this rather than, you know, I think, and we're guessing it's some information here, but it's somewhere along those lines. But what we will do in the second half of the year, we'll get do some research in the break and get the exact information and clarify it in the second half of the year just to make sure that we're all heading on the same page on all of that. But a really terrific performance by Australia to this point. Job's not done yet. Currently 4-2 in the tournament. So they have done really well. The only team they have lost to is the Netherlands twice. Being the host nation, I imagine that they have probably the strongest lineup there. The other two teams being Chinese Taipei, Japan and Curacao, all have slightly weakened teams due to international commitments, pro ball players in the US and the like. So, but still, Australia's put together a terrific team and have done really well in this tournament so far. But the games, I believe it'll be on at
3 a.m. tomorrow morning, I believe.
3 a.m. You can get it on the stream, so keep an eye out for that. Stick with us, folks. We're just going to take a short break. But coming up after the break, we're going to be having a chat with Brendan Wilson, the head coach of the Southern Mariners team, who was just successful over in the Philippines. You might have read about it online. They're heading to the U.S. Maine over in the U.S. next Friday to compete in the Little League World Series. But stick with us. You're on SEN Baseball.
Baseball is the largest spectator sport in the world. In 2015 alone, over 73 million people attended professional games in the United States, with 65 million people playing in over 100 countries around the world. Baseball is the world's second largest participation sport. Baseball is truly a game that everyone can enjoy. It's free to try and cheap to play, but most importantly, it's fun for all. From T-ball and Little League to seniors and masters, for the young and the young at heart, baseball is the perfect game for boys and girls and moms and dads too. With over 105 local clubs in Victoria, get started by going to www.baseballvictoria.com.au to see how you can get involved today.
And welcome back to SEN Baseball. Joining us now on the line is the successful coach of the Southern Mariners. Just went through undefeated in the Philippines and will be heading to the US next week to compete in the Little League World Series. Brendan Wilson, Will, are you there, mate?
I am. Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, very well, thanks. Mate, not excited about this weather.
Oh, no, the weather's pretty ordinary, mate. And tell me about it. I've had a brick wall blow down overnight. So,
fantastic.
Yeah, everything's going beautifully. But, mate, back on the main topic here, of course, successful performance over in the Philippines. We did speak to you last week, and you were just going into the final that particular day. You had Guam in the semi-final. 2-1 result there. They obviously played really well, but then to come out in the final and shut out Guam, winning at 10-0, must have been terrific performance by the kids.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, we went into the first game and we'd just come off a 33-0 win. And so to beat Guam 2-1, we actually played as a team really well. I think I said this, you know, it was a really good team effort. We just didn't have the bats fire. Hustle got us to win in that game. Good teams find a way to win. All those things actually happened. They came to fruition. So the final was kind of like, we took BP on the day off for the first time because it was so hot and the ground was always wet because of the rains that would come through that we never actually took BP or hitting wiffle ball. So on the day off from 4 to 5 in the cooler weather, we took BP and we took it on a field that everyone could see and we were loud and it was really like, it was just a bit of a morale boost. Yes, there was a little bit of show off to it, and don't get me wrong, you know, we're all about that a little bit, but it was more a morale boost. And we did that, and we came out in the final, and obviously we had our starting pitcher throw 5 shutout innings and give up 1 hit, but our bats, we put up an 8 spot in the second inning. And I mean, it wasn't Guam's best day, but we strung together 7 hits in a row in one inning in the grand final of the Asia Pacific Championship. So that's just goes to show the character of the team. We had an off day. We found a way to win, and then we come up in the final and absolutely play to our absolute strengths. And, I mean, that's what we probably should have done the first time round, but it wasn't our day. But we showed our strengths, and we got on the front foot very early. And Jackson Boyd, in two finals now, has thrown 12 or 13 innings for two hits.
Wow.
So you've got a big game pitching.
Yeah, terrific.
Will, I was following on Twitter, and just looking at the box score, looked like it was a pretty easy performance for the boys. Was that the case, or was there a bit of struggle to find that momentum in the final?
Look, the first inning we got two runners on and didn't score. We got two on with two out. So, as I think I said, Guam last week, Guam have these guys that throw, say, 78 miles an hour, so okay stuff.
Yeah.
But they throw these Ephus knuckleballs, and in the game one, we chased about eight of them. In game two, in the final, we only chased one. And so we already changed our approach and we were ready to go. So that led into getting some runners on base early. In the second inning, we went out and then seven hits in a row and a walk. So in there, and then there was an out and a few other walks. And then they made an error and the wheel started to fall off a bit. But we put up five runs before a walk or an error. So we just started to play past the buck baseball. We had a couple of bunts, we went down for hits. We stole some bases. We got everything going our way, and then Guam fell apart a little bit, and we coasted to 10 runs, and then we got to eight, and then scored two in the fourth, and then got through. So we were never really challenged. In that fifth inning, we decided to have a comebacker and throw that halfway up the right field line, just with nerves and all those usual things. We loaded the bases actually in the fifth, but with two out, it was never in jeopardy. If we had to keep playing, we'd keep playing. That's all we're there for. We're there for seven innings or longer if they did make a comeback, but. Knowing that you're 10 runs up and you've just had a bit of a brain fart, you can still get back on the mound and get right after your pitch, and whatever happens, happens. So, look, it's never easy, because in a final it's tense, but we got to a point at that one stage where we're like, look, we are going to America. How amazing is this?
Yeah, right. Hey, Willow, you just, good segue there, heading to America. What is the process now? Are you able to train with the kids? I believe you leave next week for the US. Firstly, like, when do you leave? Where do you go? And have you been able to continue training with the kids leading into this next stage of the tournament?
Yeah, so we got back on Monday. So we have the kids have to get back into school and their own clubs and everything. So we will train tomorrow, being Sunday, for just 2 hours. We'll have a debrief with the parents, and then we fly out next Friday. So we're just going to have a light session. They've all been back at their club trainings, and they obviously need to rest their bodies with the short turnaround and the heat and everything, and they've come back to cold weather. So just trying to minimise, the contact of stuff, but also keep them fresh. So we'll swing the bats tomorrow, have a meeting, and then we fly out Friday morning. We're going to Bangor in Maine, which is the northeast corner of the USA, known for its lobster and beautiful scenery up there. Yeah. I've never been up there. I know nothing about it, but apparently it's fantastic. It's a purpose-built stadium for this tournament. It's a senior size, but it's purpose-built, and it's got the contract for this tournament for a long time. I think it's called the Senior League. Sorry, it's the Little League World Series for Senior League Baseball, and that's
right.
A World Series, or I don't know, it's got a huge long name because Little League is the main thing. So, yeah, we go up there. We're looking forward to it. All the boys are very excited. Unfortunately, we lose two guys. We lose Ben Fiorenzi and Declan Crocker to the Australian under-15 team. They're in Japan now, currently in a mini camp before they start their games for the World Cup.
Has that unbalanced your lineup at all?
Look,
just those two kids coming out?
Them being under-15s and this team being an under-17 technically team, it hasn't. They are two of the younger guys that are. Declan's a left-handed pitcher, and Ben Fiorenzi is a utility player who came in after we lost Nathan Piccioni after Geelong, because he moved back to Canada.
Right.
So fortunately they're not in our everyday starting nine. Although Ben has started games at catching second base and shortstop and in the outfield.
Yep.
And Declan was our starting pitcher in Lismore for game four. And he's been my specialty lefty. And he's been under the arms of Travis Blackwell. So he actually has a fantastic pickoff move. So I sent him out there knowing that if he walks a bloke, he's probably going to pick him off. And he's done it. He's backed it up. So,
right.
So yes, I lose them. And it's Well, I mean, it's unfortunate. We've been through this before. The kids have to make choices and so far, but it is what it is, and it's gonna hurt us a little bit. But I guess I'm lucky that I get to keep my older guys together, and they'll get another crack next year, and hopefully they can take what they learn in the Philippines and what they're learning in Japan now and bring it back to the team for next year. So it's an unbalance, but we'll get away with it because we've only got to go and we win five games, we're the World Series champions. So we don't have to play eight games like we did in Lismore where we needed as many pitches as we could.
Obviously, you mentioned you win five games and you're the World Series champion, but what's the expectation going over there? Obviously, you want to win the five games, but three tournaments through with the team, yet to lose a game. What would be a pass mark coming back?
Look, firstly, I think flat out we will lose a game in America because the competition is going to be far stiffer, and that will be the tough one to swallow. It'll be, we play the winner, we have the first day off because of the way the draw is. So it's double elimination. So the second day we're playing a team that's already played once, and we play the winner of Central America and Europe, South Africa. Hopefully being day two for them, we can come out with our ace and get after them and get a win on the board. And then from that point on, I don't know what will happen because we could end up facing Latin America and the best American team and end up in trouble. But we could also scrape through. We're a very good team. We just don't know what to expect. But again, this is charter baseball, so it's not the best. It's not the best of the best of the best, but it's the best team. And we've proven that we are the best team through Victoria, Australia and Asia Pac. There's no reason why we can't go and compete and be the best team in the world because we play so well as a team.
So assuming you'll go to that Central America, Africa, Europe game and do some scouting?
I definitely will be. Yeah, that's something that I've always done is go and watch the other games. Some people don't, but I'm a baseball fan, but I like to scout and get my information. I don't really write notes. It's just observation for me. I like to relax, see how the coaches are interacting, see how the players take bad calls and so forth, and see how we can use that to our advantage and also just prepare our guys, let my pitchers know how they should approach certain batters. But yeah, I'll definitely be watching that. I mean, there's only one diamond, so fortunately I could sit there all day on day one and probably watch three, I think there's three games, and get a shite load of information, ready to come back and relay it to my team.
Don't get sunburnt while you're there, Willow. Look, it's a terrific performance, and I'm not going to take away any part of what you've done so far. Just want you to speak a little bit about Jack Lana, who unfortunately is, I believe, unable to make this leg of the trip also due to his illness. But just give us a little bit on Jack's impact leading up to the first stage, which, of course, you mentioned there was Lismore. He was unable to make the Philippines and then unable to make this US side of it.
Yeah.
But just the start of Jack leading into the Lismore thing, what did he add to this team?
Well, I'll go back quickly. In November last year, we started this process. So Jack said, I want to coach this team. I need to get some helpers. I don't really know what to do, blah, blah, blah. We went through it. I've done a little bit of coaching at the state level before. So I was like, okay, I'm happy to help. I'll be the pitching coach. Cool. Love to. So we have a couple of tryouts and then we pick this team and we go to Geelong. We've never trained before. Jack basically bought these 15 kids who didn't all know it. They all knew each other, but there was groups. There was four that knew each other really well. There were seven that knew each other from Dingley. It was, a bit clicky.
Yeah.
So we broke that apart and turned, at the time we had 16 players plus two bench players, two reserves. We turned all those little groups into 18 players as a team, and Jack was absolutely the main reason for that. But I cannot explain how he did it, but he just got them to play for each other. He got them to understand the game. Very good at being niche for the individual, but involving the whole team in the process. And so that started the process. And we went through Geelong. We learned everything about each other. And then we got to train for 6-7 weeks in preparation for Lismore. And at that time, we found out Jack was going to go through cancer treatment and radiation and so forth. And he tailored his whole program so that he could go to Lismore.
Yeah.
He battled it every day, having to, go through. He's got this big tumour on the back of his leg. He had two internal tumours. But he nutted it out. He gave the guys inspiration that he could actually do that, show them that baseball and being on the team and you want to be there and it's worth fighting for. But he never used it as an excuse. He got emotional one time when we were playing really well and he was just really happy and he couldn't control it.
Yeah.
And that's just the side effects of all that, of everything that he's going through. But other than that, he maintained and was just the strength of that team. And then we get home from Lismore and he goes and sees his doctor and they schedule his surgery basically at the wrong time, but it had to be the right time for his own personal health. And so he's been the biggest part of the journey. When I went and saw him in hospital, he asked me to take on the role and I kind of knew it was coming. And so I started to think about everything. And then we sat down with the parents and explained the process to the parents. And, you know, the first thing I said is all I'm doing is steering the ship.
Yeah.
You know, Jack's done all the work. And for me, I'm just steering the ship. I've got to make a few tough decisions that I'll have to carry. But outside of that, it is what we have done as a team and what Jack has done as the head coach to get this team to where it is. And I cannot take any credit at all, honestly, because he has just done everything to get the team going the right way.
Will, I want to finish up on a bit of a lighter note. I recall last year seeing a few games on ESPN. Do you know if we're going to be able to catch any on our screens?
Yeah, you'll get the Little League games, I think there's 72 of them televised. Our championship game will be televised by ESPN.
Okay.
So, but not the round games, not the elimination game. So, I'm not sure what times and so forth. I haven't got an actual schedule of the games, but our championship game is definitely on ESPN. The rest of them, I believe, there's live scoring updates and there may be some streaming, but we haven't got confirmation of that yet. The information coming back is not quite clear.
Hey, Willow, thanks very much for your time today. Really appreciate it. Don't underestimate the amount of work that you have put into it. Jack has done a terrific job, but you've taken over from here. And good luck when you get to the US. I think you said you leave next Friday. Tournament starts Sunday. Is that right?
Yep, that's right. Spot
will be
on.
The 31st of July. Yep. Tournament gets underway. So we'll encourage people to get online or to try and catch it on their TV screens. But thanks for your time today and good luck in the tournament.
Thank you very much. Cheers, guys.
And a big thank you there to Brendan Wilson. Good luck to him and the team heading over to the US. Good luck also to the Australian national team at Honkaball Week. And there was some interesting one that did touch my ears just last night. It actually was. Australian teams had some tensions over there, I believe, with the umpiring side of things. There was a veiled threat to maybe pull out of the tournament. This is something that I haven't had confirmed, but it really seems to be a lot of tension over there, and some of the Australian players have been unfairly ejected out of games.
Interesting. We'll have to keep our ears to the ground and
keep an ear to the ground
and see what happens.
Yes, but heading into the preliminary final there against Japan in that Honkaball tournament, you can get it on the stream. But as I said, thanks to Brendan Wilson, thanks to you, Xavier Player, for today. And that's the end of the show for today, folks. Make sure, I did say we're going to have a break for about 3 weeks' time, so keep an ear out on the SEN America website. You'll be able to see when the next show is uploaded. But thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the SEN MLB podcast. For more SEN America podcasts, head to sen.com.au. To keep up to date with the latest American sports news and interviews from around SEN, follow SEN America on Twitter at SEN America and on Facebook at facebook.com/SEN America.